This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are actually worth the annual fee and which just look shiny, how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships, when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices, and more. So travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
What is up, everybody? DeAndre Koch here for another weekly edition of the Quick Hits. For those new to the show, that is our weekly points and miles and travel news that are more up to date and relevant. Have a few things to share with all of you guys today. Going to try to keep this one a little on the shorter side as best as possible. The first one that I wanted to bring up, or the first piece of news, I should say, which isn't directly tied to points and miles in the show, but has relevance, so bear with me, is that our planning firm, the firm that I own, Truecity Wealth Management, for the third year in a row, was ranked as one of the top financial planning firms in the state of Virginia by Forbes. Now, I don't say that to brag. It is a great achievement. We have a fantastic team. But I say that because one of the pieces of feedback I've received, or quite often actually since doing this podcast, is that by being a financial advisor, I've brought an air of credibility to the world of points and miles. And there are some fantastic, absolutely fantastic people in this space, and many of which I've had on the show, who don't have any credentials as a financial advisor, but they are absolute geniuses and just whiz kids when it comes to points and miles at a level that I'm not even at. And I think they are extremely, extremely valuable to be able to have, to be able to share. And there's many people that share great content in the world of points and miles. So I want to be very clear, taking nothing away from any of those individuals. One of the things that I wanted to do when starting this podcast was to do something a little bit different and to be able to provide a very different angle or approach to the world of points and miles, and make sure I'm always promoting the air of financial responsibility, fiscal responsibility. And while I don't act through the podcast, obviously, as a financial advisor or a fiduciary, I think it's important for people to understand who is behind the mic, who's the person that's giving advice, and being someone who the licenses that I hold, the credentials that I hold, have weight to it. I have liability for the things that I say, even though I'm not acting as an advisor through the podcast. So I say that because I want to make sure that you all know, the listeners, we are growing by the day, essentially. So anyone that might be new to the show or someone that's been here for a while, A, I absolutely value and appreciate all of you. I love to say thank you every single week for being here and listening to me. So first off, that's the one thing I want to point out. But the second piece is I don't take it lightheartedly that the things that I say are important and relevant. And some people add extra weight to that because of the fact that I have credentials and responsibilities in the financial world. So we're excited to receive the recognition for the third year in a row. I have a fantastic team that works hard. That same team is the team that allows me to be able to travel and get away and use points and miles and see the world. And while I can never 100% disconnect from work, because I always have to make sure I know what's going on with the practice and clients and their money and everything else, I have a fantastic team. So I wanted to give a shout out to them for the efforts that they put in. And also at the same time, I know that I have other advisors, as many other advisors that listen to this podcast, as well as I've had many clients that either just randomly found this podcast and were like, hey, my advisor is the one talking, or people that have listened to the podcast and have become clients, which I'm thankful for as well. So thankful to everyone that listens to the show. And again, I understand that the aspect of being an advisor is not taken lightly. And I want to make sure that you all know, or if someone maybe new, maybe you have someone in your circle that's skeptical on points and miles and the fact that, you know, they may think it ruins your credit, it damages your finances. Hey, you have someone here that has some credibility that can say, hey, when done properly, it can change your life, but absolutely for the better. In the ongoing saga of Zill Money payroll on points, new update Thankfully, it doesn't seem like it's been completely shut down, but we've been having some wonderful conversation in the Facebook group Messenger chat. So if you're not a part of the Facebook group, I urge you to join. And if you are in the Facebook group and you're not in the Messenger chat, I again urge you to join. Fantastic conversation. But it seems like Zill has, I guess, through their update, I don't know if the month of July was supposed to be a test run or they just have a certain capacity of what they can charge through credit card transactions or not. But basically, they said that they have paused their payroll transactions until August 1st, or maybe credit card transactions in general. Specifically, the wording was the credit card feature is undergoing a significant update, and currently, there are certain limits on transactions during this testing phase. By August 1st, the feature will be fully operational, allowing you to conduct transactions. And big shout out to Kelly, one of our listeners in the chat, who posted a screenshot of that before I was able to run my own payroll and see what the results of that would be. So that's a little bit of a bummer because things look like it's going to be delayed a little bit. However, they are allowing you to run payroll back at least, I think, 7 to 10 days past. So if you do have a payroll coming up on August 1st, I would run the previous one and the one after that and see what happens to, again, earn those points that I know all of us are trying to earn on the payroll side. So Bilt has some big moves coming and they're really shaking things up in a big way. They just got backed by about $250 million in new funding. And so they're expanding beyond their rent payments and they're creating a path to earn points on mortgages, HOA fees, student housing. That's not as much as a surprise. I think, well, HOA fees and student housing, that is the fact that they're going to be partnering with United Wholesale Mortgage and others so that not only can you earn points on your mortgage payments, but also through certain programs, HOA fees, and even student housing through the American Campus Communities. But probably the bigger news is that they are moving away from their partnership with Wells Fargo, it looks like. I'm not sure if they're going to be joining up with Amex or another major carrier, but basically they are going to be offering three new cards coming February 2026. One will be a no fee option, a second $95 card, and a $495 premium card. And apparently it's all going to be designed based on member feedback. And the current Bilt MasterCard holders will have a very seamless transition to the new platform. So stay tuned. We'll see what's going to happen with that. I believe the reward structures, the benefits, all that will come out this fall. So obviously, we're going to keep you posted when that comes out. I mentioned, I believe, in last week's Quick Hits that Turkish Airways had their 1 million mile contest. Maybe it was a week before that. They did pull that. I'm sure anyone that was looking to chase down their goal of 6 continents within a very limited time frame was probably tracking the news on this. But by some chance, if you were thinking of possibly trying to earn 1 million Turkish miles by flying to 6 continents by October 27th, they have gone ahead and pulled this. I guess they just realized more people were trying to do this than they assumed would. And so they said that members who purchased at least one ticket or completed a flight across 6 continents by July 8th will retain their eligibility. If these members complete all flights across 6 continents by October 27th, they will earn their 1 million miles. Tickets purchased after July 8th will not be considered within the scope of the campaign. And this is basically, they said this was in line with recent updates. And then they go into explain this, which, I mean, recent updates could be literally anything. They could have just said, hey, because someone sneezed, we decided to change this. So unfortunately, this got pulled on, no longer an option. Not sure many people were actually going after it in total, obviously, but obviously it was enough for them to say, yeah, this, we're not giving out 1 million miles to this many people that are chasing points down. Next up was something really interesting. So last week I was invited to a virtual press conference. I was actually also invited to the launch party, but it was in New York in the middle of the week and, you know, clients and business have take precedence. But for a new app and loyalty program called Journey. And we had talked about this in our recent newsletter that went out last week. And it's a brand new travel app that's aiming to reward stays at independent boutique hotels and private rentals. These are places that traditional loyalty programs overlook. these are kind of like hotels that you see, you find have joined SLH, so small luxury hotels, or Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like independent properties that truly aren't, or at least weren't tied to anything before. Well, now they've got a list of about 1,500 properties that are live and growing. And these are like from tree houses and ski chalets to floating homes. Most of their options right now are currently in North America. And the interesting thing about this is the way it combines kind of your traditional points earning style with AI and some other features. So you can earn and redeem points on unique stays. You can actually use your points instantly, which is really interesting. So if you know, as an example, that your upcoming stay is going to earn you, I don't know, 10,000 points. Well, the way that some of these hotels are going to be operating is you can actually use your points for things like spa treatments or a couple's massage or a romantic dinner or something along those lines. You can actually use your points in ways outside of just, you know, nightly stays. But if you know that your stay is going to earn you 10,000 points, and let's say there's an option to spend 2,000 of them, but you don't have 2,000 to spend, you can actually spend your pending points, which is something very unique as well for on-site food, drinks, those type of things. And it's usually going to be somewhere between like 50 to 100% depending on your status with them. It is free to join like most loyalty programs. There's different tiers. But what I also found really interesting is that you actually can get retroactive points if you stayed at the properties in the Alliance recently. So if there's a hotel that you just stayed at 3 weeks ago before joining this loyalty program, and then you sign up, it's going to scan through your Gmail like a lot of AI travel apps do, and it's going to find bookings, and you're going to actually earn points for stays that you've completed even before you've joined the program, which I think is really interesting. Now, the flip side is actually on the hotel experience as well, because we got a nice inside peek on what it's going to look like if you're a hotel manager. And what it's going to do, unlike most loyalty programs, like if you're a Hyatt Globalist, they know your status and they know to treat you well, but they don't really know much about you. Well, again, using AI or however it's going to work, when you go and check into this boutique hotel, they're going to know DeAndre is coming in, DeAndre is engaged, DeAndre likes diving. You might want to recommend this type of restaurant to him. His welcome cocktail for him, you should probably do a old fashioned. And for his fiance, Taryn, she's going to like a mezcal, passion fruit mezcalita, right? It's going to be very curated so they can really try to individualize the experience. Now, these are all good things in theory, obviously. I'm excited to see how this rolls out. They don't have that many properties yet. They're adding more. But it's going to be a very unique new point system, more so a new app and loyalty program, I should say. And we'll see how that plays out and how it works its way in with some of these bigger options like the IHGs and the Hyatts of the world. And speaking of Hyatt, one of the last pieces of news, which I'm super excited about because the timing of this couldn't be more perfect, is Hyatt is running a 777, a 777 bonus of points per night at select Hyatt hotels that contain casinos worldwide. So you do have to register first before you actually stay, and registration is open from now through September 30th, and it's available on cash or award stays and up to 10 nights. So you can earn basically a bonus 7,770 points. What's amazing is this is going to be pretty much all of their casino hotels. So the Rio Hotel and Casino in Vegas, the Grand Hyatt Bahamar, the Grand Hyatt Macau. But what I'm excited about, the Venetian and the Palazzo, which are both in Las Vegas, and the Palazzo is where my bachelor party is in a couple weeks. So perfect timing to have a multiple night stay in Vegas with some bonus points to come in. So super excited about that. The great thing is a lot of these properties, are fantastic stays even beyond their casinos. So you can just rack up bonus points. If you just happen to be choosing one of these, take a look. You do have to register. You can do that through the Hyatt app or online very easily and just have a nice 777 bonus added to each night stay. And the last one we'll get to is a member question. This was actually asked in our Facebook group by Manny. So Manny's question is, after diving deeper into the points and miles space, I've noticed that those who are most successful earn their miles mostly through business cards, whether from welcoming offers or otherwise. Do you, most of you have businesses, or what does it take to qualify as having a business? Do you need employees? what are those credit card companies looking for before they approve the business cards? What's the easiest way to create a business? I don't think this gets addressed enough across the points and miles space. In listening to various podcasts, the expert talk about millions of miles earned or redeemed frequently. Thank you. So Manny, fantastic questions here. We talk about this a lot, but I don't really dig deep. And maybe I'll spend an episode digging a little bit deeper into this singular topic. But I think it's a great question to highlight on a high level. And there was a couple of members of the group that already offered fantastic questions. That offered fantastic answers, I should say. But basically, if you have any sort of business or job that pays you as a 1099, that alone allows you to be a business. There's a few different things besides that, but very simply, if you're an Uber driver, if you're a realtor, there's physicians, there's many doctors that work for hospitals that pay them as a 1099. If you're a 1099, you're technically self-employed. That is a business. Whether you have an LLC, a corporation, or what, does not matter. You are a business. Now, there's other ways that you can also be a business even without something that official as having a 1099 that you're receiving. If you're a babysitter and a family's paying you $1,000 a month to watch their kid, as an example, they should be 1099-ing you, but if they're not, you should still be claiming that income. You can claim that income, and then, of course, then you have the ability to write off things like gas and other expenses. I'm not going to get into the taxation of things because I'm not a CPA, but that allows you to operate as a business. Great examples for me on the personal side. When I was much younger, I was DJing on the side as a hobby. So I would have friends that would say, hey, can you DJ my wedding or this event or whatever it may be? Fun fact, I still have all my equipment. I do spin from time to time and have a blast. I actually have gotten to DJ in random clubs around the world because I've just been told the DJ, hey, can I hop on? They let me do it and I get to spin. So it's kind of fun. But anyway, that's besides the point. So when I was DJing and I was actually getting paid from a gig here or there, I would have to report that income technically. So if I got paid $500 from this place or $100 from this place or $1,000 here, technically that's all income that I'm reporting, but I got to write off my equipment. If I bought speakers or I bought lights or whatever it may be, that made me a business. Now, my friend who got married, who paid me $500, they're not sending me a 1099, but it's my job to report that I received that income. I could choose not to, but it's my job to. And receiving that income makes me be able to operate as a business. Same thing if you're selling things on Etsy, if you're in the business of buying and selling stuff and putting it on Facebook Marketplace or eBay. These are all ways that you can operate and you are a legitimate business. Now, to be fair and to be very clear, you don't want to lie to banks or institutions and say, oh yeah, I have a business. I do this. I do that. I make all this money. All those different things. You don't want to do that. You want to be very truthful, but at the same time, they're not necessarily looking for you to have employees and all these different things. Now, if you do fill out your paperwork, I will say recently, I applied, both Taryn and I applied for the new Chase Sapphire Business Reserve. I, under my wealth management practice, which I have a few different cards for, they reached out to me and basically said, hey, can you send us your business EIN and a couple other things, which are things I legitimately applied for the card under. And that didn't surprise me at all. For Taryn, for her business, which is consulting, she has her own LLC and such for consulting. They asked for a lot more things. They asked her more questions about her business and the work that she did. And we both were able to get approved. So I've seen before many people that they don't even operate under a business entity name or number. They use their personal social. You can do that. If I was a DJ, when I was doing DJing myself personally, I would buy speakers, buy equipment, and pretty much 100% of what I made just went to buy more stuff for me at the time. So I really wasn't profiting from it. But all those different things, when I filed my taxes, I literally had a separate, I think it's called a Schedule C, that just said DJing, and it was ran under my social security number. So if I wanted to get a card for DJing, I would run it through my social security number, would be what I would put on my application. So I hope this helps on kind of a higher level. Likely in the future, we'll do a much deeper dive on the business side of things. The benefit of business cards, obviously, is the fact that you can get a much higher welcome bonus or sign-up bonus with it. They do typically require more spend. They typically do have more cost. So there's a lot of things you have to weigh. But as I've mentioned a million times before, and actually this is a good point to kind of clarify more specifically and succinctly, when I was doing DJing and was concerned that my business, if I bought a piece of equipment or a speaker, I was using my personal credit card. I didn't have a single business card back then. This is going back 15 years ago. I didn't have a single business card under my DJ name or DJ or entity or anything like that. I used my personal card. I just recorded the charge and was able to write that off as a business expense, even though I used my personal card. On the flip side, if you get a business card, you can charge all the things you want to in the world on the personal side. You just can't write those expenses off, but you can still use the card for personal expenses, right? If you use it for business expenses, the business things you can write off, but the personal you cannot. So you want to keep a clean accounting of what are you actually spending your money on using the card for as it relates to the business. So this was probably a little bit more in depth than I actually had planned to go, but wanted to be helpful because I think this is probably a question, Manny, that if you had many other people have as they're getting into the world of points and miles, and you probably don't want to have to dig through my entire catalog of episodes to get an answer similar to that, although I hope you do. So I hope this was helpful for all of you out there. Again, as always, thank you so much for listening to the show each and every week. It takes a lot of effort on our end to put out this content for you. I appreciate all the positive feedback. As always, thank you, thank you, thank you. We will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Travel doesn't just happen when you get on a plane. I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore not just where to go, but how to bring travel into your everyday life through books, shows, and stories that shift your perspective, plus insights on smart destinations, timely trends, and interviews with the people shaping the way we explore. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or voyescape.com.